Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, losing a child is every parent's worst nightmare. And my next guest, Claire Cullen, went through this unimaginable loss when she and her husband, Keith, lost their beautiful son, Aaron, after being born at Port Leisha Hospital in 2016. As if this loss was not enough, Claire and Keith were left with a lot of unanswered questions as to what went wrong and why. Last year, Claire co-founded Safer Births Ireland with Lisa Duffy, whose son Luke also died in Port Leisha Hospital in 2018. Now, the group have approximately 30 members and they're calling on the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, to hold a commission of investigation into avoidable hospital mother and baby deaths and injuries. And Claire joins me now. Hi there, Claire.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
Great to talk to you. And I know it's quite late, so thank you for agreeing to chat to us at this mad hour of the night. Claire, can you take us back and take us back to then, if it's okay to talk about it, and just tell us the story.
Of course, no problem at all. Well, I would have had Aaron in 2016, and Aaron was born prematurely in Port Leash Hospital. Happened to be over a bank holiday weekend, and I presented a number of times from the Friday to the Monday, just in. I suppose I was presenting with labour signs, but I was early, so it was very much considered not in labour. And Aaron was then born on the Tuesday, just via my membranes ruptured, and it was an emergency section. I happened to be in the hospital for quite a few hours before that actually happened. And he was rushed into the Coombe, where he survived for 5 days. Unfortunately, he had suffered a hypoxic injury, chronic and acute, and he very much had an awful lot of complications due to the hypoxia. So over the 5 days, he suffered quite a lot, and subsequently died really of what they say was more or less a clot from the kidney and caused a heart attack. And yeah, so we ended up going down the route of investigative processes and inquests. Mm. And we're sort of 8 years now into that.
Yeah. Just to explain, hypoxia is a condition where there's not enough oxygen getting to the most important places in a body. Isn't that the case?
Well, it's basically a lack of oxygen. Yeah, lack of oxygen to the brain. So the longer you go without oxygen, you know, the more of a brain injury you'll have, and then it will impact then how your body functions and the organs in general, how they function.
I'm curious to know, Claire, when something like this, something catastrophic like this goes wrong, does the delivery room become an emergency setting? Do the staff who are assisting you with the delivery, do they know that things have gone terribly wrong?
Oh, 100%. It's very much, you know, we need to move now. And in an emergency section specifically, you're down to seconds, you're down to, you know, 1 minute. But it's as fast as you can get down to theatre, as fast as you can, depending on the severity of the situation. A lot of parents could be knocked out, and then some just given the epidural and awake for the section in general. But in these cases, when a child is in distress and they're born unable to transition, you know, out of utero, they need an awful lot of help. So they need an awful lot of respiratory help. So there's countless amount of medics in the room with you, and everybody is working, whether it's on yourself or working on the baby. And it's very traumatic, I would say, like for a lot of women that have been through it, it's very traumatic.
How were you during this particular point in time?
For me personally, I very much, you know, it happened so fast that you are, you're just happy that your baby's coming into the world. You very much are grateful that you're in the right place, and that you're ready to welcome your child. And, you know, you wait those many number of months preparing, and the excitement and everything else, it doesn't really cross your mind something's going to happen, or that, you know, that your child will die. That's definitely not something that would have ever crossed my mind. And, you know, when my son was born, he was very ill. And in that, I still, I suppose, naively thought, okay, it's okay. He's in the hospital. He's been moved to the Coombe. Everything, he has what he needs, you know. So you don't allow yourself go there mentally. And I think a lot of parents would say the same, that their experiences are very similar to that.
I presume it comes back to that old adage, we're in the right place, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. We put an awful lot of trust into our healthcare, and it comes back to what even the group and Safer Birth Ireland are calling for. It's really like we're at the mercy of experienced staff, experienced medical care, and then in the aftermath, we're at the experience of the investigative processes. So it really does, you know, you just have to wait and allow everything to follow through, you know.
Now, the unanswered questions as to what went wrong and why shocking things went wrong. How long were you left waiting before you realised that a lot of these questions might never be answered?
Oh God, I'm still asking questions. So if I'm 8 years on, there's your answer. But like even just for one of our members, whose son Mark was born in 1986, and she's here still looking for answers and asking for answers. And she's part of our board of committee, and she herself only met with Simon Harris when he was the Minister of Health there back in 2017. Mm. And even then, he promised her, you know, the sun, moon and the stars around her own son's case. And sure, there she was, you know, standing out yesterday, you know, representing Mark and still asking for a better maternity 38 years on.
And when you go back even further then to the time when Dr. James O'Reilly was the health minister, there were 5 baby deaths at that point, weren't there, in Port Leisha?
There was 5 baby deaths. And I just noted that even specifically in my speech yesterday up in the Dáil, because it's very significant, you know. At that time, there was a prime time investigation. It was, you know, everyone knew it as the Port Leash baby scandal. And there was 5 baby deaths that the then, you know, Minister of Health, James O'Reilly, jumped into his car, basically, and went and met all of these affected women. And he ordered the reviews that followed through. And those were deaths, basically, between 2006 and 2012. From there, then, our first more or less national maternity strategy started. But here we were standing up yesterday, you know, asking for the same things that that those women were asking for then. Only we're 10 years on, and we have 45 babies that we're talking about, and we're asking for an inquiry into all of those deaths. Because it needs to happen. It needs to happen now, not in another 10 years, you know.
Yeah, and I'm mindful of the fact, obviously, that the families of the Stardust victims had to wait 43 years for justice. When you put it in that perspective, you're at the beginning of what will probably be a very long journey, but maybe now, all this time later, when you look back to 1980, 1981, when their long journey began, I like to think anyway that things have changed to the point where, thanks to the way technology has changed and thanks to the way, you know, we communicate has changed, that this inquiry will be held more quickly. Do you believe that?
Oh, to be completely honest with you, I don't. We don't really have much trust in the system or in the minister to even call.
Tell me about that, Claire. When you say you don't have much trust in the system, when you say the system, it's one of these loopholes that perhaps, you know, it's almost like a government statement where they talk about the system, but, you know, you're the mothers. So what does the system mean to you?
Well, the system basically means, you know, the fair and just process around all of the investigative elements. And that's not just within the HSE, but it's also within the coronial inquests as well. And what's happening is that information and non-disclosures of information are happening throughout all investigative processes. And it's actually a common trend throughout all of the families that have gone through these, whether it's systems analysis review, whether it's an inquest into their debt, where a lot of information is actually not disclosed to investigators or to the coroner themselves. And that is a massive problem. But the issue is that it's more or less being highlighted. We're bringing awareness around all of this. And I don't know, we just are always banging our heads against the wall. Yeah. We don't really get answers anywhere, do you know?
And then there's also, in huge situations like this, and this is mammoth, in terms of when you look at the number of babies involved and the number of families involved in the inquiry, that when you hit this non-disclosure wall, you feel that that's the end of it. You feel that the doors aren't going to open again. And then you also come up against indemnification problems where a lot of people are indemnified by their employer. The employer here would presumably be the HSE. So really, you're dealing once again not with individuals, but you're back to the system, aren't you?
We are. We're back to the system. And it is the same. You know, we talk about fear-mongering in regards to ourselves, and that is just the service user. But we're well aware of the, you know, intimidation for staff throughout these investigative processes as well. But for us, even, like, another common trend is that we could get to inquest and the staff is not available to attend because they have left the country after the, you know, whether a case had come up for them. And, you know, it is across the board. It's a massive, massive problem. But it's what we're up against, you know.
Do you think and this is something I was thinking about earlier today. Obviously, the Taoiseach, the new Taoiseach, he's faced with, like, God, how many things is he faced with at the moment that he's trying to resolve? Do you feel that this is a priority for him? Which it should be.
Well, look, when I had Aaron, it was in 2016, Simon Harris himself was the Minister of Health then.
That's right.
He's very well aware of all that's going on. And I'd hope that it would be a priority for him, you know, because he's able to stand up and he's able to offer, you know, a lot to a lot of women that meet him, even families that are going through this, that have met him in the past. And there's no point in saying something unless you're going to follow through with it as well. So we're hoping that he will come back to us and he will initiate some element of an inquiry. You know, just even in his speech yesterday, he said to the Stardust, basically said, we failed you when you needed us the most from the very beginning. And as you highlight there, you know, we're walking in, this is the very beginning for us. So I hope he actually listens to himself in that space and he hears us as well. And we can only really, as I said, we're at their mercy. And our maternity system is at their mercy because it's broken.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
It must be infuriating when you hear what is effectively an avoidable death of a very, very small baby being referred to as a learning experience.
Yeah.
I mean, that's heartbreaking.
It is. And, you know, even when you say that sentence, that is the process.
Yeah.
Parents are interviewed the exact same way as staff are interviewed. They're spoken to just like how you have voiced that sentence. Mm-hmm. You know, the empathy, the compassion, it's there sometimes with some investigators, but a lot of the other times, you know, it's cold and it's oppressive. You know, it's not, it's traumatic. It's a very traumatic experience for families to go through. And it's years of trauma, which is, you know, it's so unnecessary, so unnecessary.
One of the members of one of the families at the Stardust inquiry there, following the statement, an apology from him, Taoiseach, said that they'd waited 43 years, not just for justice, but so that the healing can begin. Presumably, the pain is still as raw in many respects as it was all those years ago for many of you, for all of you.
Yeah, no, and that's like you basically make a massive point. When you're going through this process, you do not start to grieve until you know or you have answers. And the trauma connected to it is very much embedded in blame and self-blame, but also the silenced culture and that that deny, defend approach that the investigative process takes and the HSE actually has. It's extremely traumatic for families, and you don't go through the bereavement process the same as what you would had you lost a loved one, and you could understand it and you could very much move through that bereavement stage. But no, it's very much traumatic, and you're stuck. You are stuck there for the years that follow. And it's really only until you have closure. And not many families actually get closure, because even after the investigations are done with, there's still answers, especially if there's, you know, information that has been withheld, or if investigations or inquests haven't come about as of yet. It's really just a very difficult process for anybody to go through.
And how do you deflect the fury and the anger? Like, I sense an air of patience about you. Is that something that you've had to accept, the fact that, like, I have to be as patient as I possibly can be? Because I'm sure the anger is not that far below the surface.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I suppose for me, it's funny. I had this conversation with one of our members yesterday, and I very much, I suppose, disassociated myself from the whole experience. It was like I was looking from the outside in. It was happening to somebody else, and as well, it's just the approach that's taken with you, that you have to detach yourself from it, and you have to leave an emotional element to the side, and you have to go at it in a very professional way, even. And that's very odd for me to even say that out loud like that, but it is the truth, and I think we all are like that. But the frustration and the anger follows throughout the whole of the experience, and it impacts people differently. Men are actually impacted differently than women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the elements of anger and frustration and trauma, it impacts them both differently. My husband would have been quite angry, and, you know, he would have been very defensive about everything, and he would have blamed, you know. And whereas I probably took that other road of, threw myself into the investigation and investigating things myself, and, you know, looking for FOIs around the care that I received and my medical files and so on. But it is placed somewhere else. So the investigation itself took over my life, and that's what happened with me. I lived the investigation for almost 5 years. And I mean that it was on my mind 24/7, constantly seeking answers and how I would get justice for my son. But had I not done that, I wouldn't have actually got the answers that I needed in the end, because there was an awful lot of non-disclosures in my case.
What did it feel like when your file arrived, when your medical file arrived?
Well, it took a long time to go through it. I waited almost 17 months for mine, and I had to follow up constantly. And it just happened to arrive after I got my final report. So they held it off for a reason. And when I went through it and I started to go through it, I can say that in that moment, there was a lot of relief, but in that relief, there was pain, because it started to unfold, and I basically started to piece the jigsaw together for the first time after 3 years, and I could see what happened to my son via my file.
They withheld your file?
They did, the FOI. I did a Freedom of Information request, and it was in February of, I think it was 2017, and I didn't actually receive it until the August, September the following year. So it was, it was 2018 into 2019, but I didn't receive my file until after my inquest, and the inquest was over, and this was the new information I received.
You could speculate, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a big piece there, just even for families, you know, that we know that there's families out there that have these questions, and we're told constantly, these things happen, your babies die, you know, and it's not our fault, our standards were followed, and you question yourself, and you don't follow through with it then because you take their word for that.
That word avoidable remains there all the time, doesn't it? That this was an avoidable death.
It is.
Yeah.
Avoidable and preventable. Yeah.
So where to from here, Claire? And I don't mean to sound as if that's the, you know, the final question. It's just that you've come so far, but where do you go from here? I know that the system, most people will say, and I think it's a fair comment to say, most people will say the system is unbeatable, and it's also not dependable, and it's probably not trustworthy in many respects either.
No, that's it. And that's our experience of the system in general. And, you know, it's a topic that nobody wants to talk about either. Mm. So, you know, even within the public domain, it's something that we find very difficult to delve into or to get any sort of media attention. And without the media, you know, where are we either? But what we're hoping is that we can somehow get the Taoiseach to agree to an inquiry. And if the inquiry does go ahead, you know, the findings and the facts related to that will be all that needs to be said. And that's our hope. But at the end of the day, that's our fight. So we're starting here now, and we've asked for it. We did ask for an inquiry later last year with the Minister of Health. So we just hope now that maybe the Taoiseach might listen to us, and that's all we can do. Hopefully we did what we needed to yesterday.
Well, you have to remind him when he does eventually sit down with you that he promised to listen to you before and he didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very important that you point that out to him, you know.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, there's a number of families that have the same to say behind us.
Is there power in numbers, do you think?
This is our motto, and 100% there is power in numbers. Like myself and Lisa and all of our women, we've all been doing this for years on our own, and we've gotten nowhere. But we literally came together last year, and here we are 1 year later, after being up in the Dáil and you know, speaking on behalf of our children and the maternity service itself. And it, you know, there's a lot to be said in that in a short space of time. So hopefully we can strive to make a bigger change.
Was it empowering that day when you went to speak? Did you feel that possibly you were kind of moving things along more quickly?
At the moment, because we don't have an answer, it's very hard to even, you know, we haven't had a response from the Taoiseach. It's very hard to feel like, okay, things will move. But in fairness, when we stood outside Leinster House yesterday, and all of the families were there, every single family that had been impacted by a loss had shown up. They were standing there wearing their colours for their child, with their pictures of their child. You know, there was 40, 50 of us all together. And, you know, that in itself is something that is monumental. It has never happened before. We've gotten all of the maternity services together to enter into the audio room yesterday and present to the Oireachtas members. So, you know, that in itself we have to be extremely proud of.
Okay, well, please keep going, and we'll keep in contact with you, Claire, okay?
Well, thank you so much for having us on this evening. We appreciate it an awful lot.
It was great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks again. Okay, bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Claire Cullen there, who went through this unimaginable loss when she and her husband Keith lost their son Aaron after being born at Portlaoise Hospital in 2016. And their demand for an official inquiry continues. And let's just hope that she gets to meet, along with the group itself, Safer Births Ireland, that Claire founded with Lisa Duffy, whose son Luke died in Portlaoise Hospital in 2018, that they get that meeting with the Taoiseach very soon. Because it's very, very, very important on so many levels that they do.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.